Welcome to the Business Spotlight Series. My name is Tanner O'Brien. I'm a senior partner here at Action Coach in Central Texas. I'm so excited to be sitting down today with none other than Grant Powell, who is the founder of Curios, which is a Web3 technology company. Man, it's going to be fun to dive in, chat about some business, about entrepreneurship, about this, you know, crazy journey of what, you know, founding a company and all that kind of stuff, you know, entails these days. So just first and foremost, Grant, thank you for taking the time to be here to have this conversation. Why don't we just start with a little bit of background? You know, give us kind of the 10,000 foot view of who you are, and then tell us a little bit about Curios.
Sure. Well, thanks to you, Tanner. Always great to connect with another fellow Texan, although I'm relatively new. I've only been here for 4 years, coming from New York City, which is a big change. But I've been in digital and technology for at least 20 years now. Spent a lot of time early on in what would be the digital agency space. I worked at Google for a while. And for those of you who know digital agencies, they're very, you know, very involved in tech. And so natural progression is we started incubating different tech ideas within our agency. Some of them got spun out, some of them failed. And eventually I landed here at Curios, which is a Web3 technology company that I've been building for the last few years.
Very cool. So tell us a little bit more about Curios. What does the business do, especially for those that are not as familiar with the Web3 space? Can it give us the behind the curtain look of what you all do?
Sure. I'll start with the surface and then we can go as deep as we want. You know, on the surface, our go-to-market is giving content creators the ability to, you know, better own their digital content, better distribute it, and better monetize it. You know, the simplest form of that is having a marketplace where people can buy, sell, trade digital content. We're talking music, ebooks, other content that you can think of. Our marketplace targets everything from musicians to athletes to influencers, anything that they're creating online that they want to share with a community, either for free or to monetize. And a big part of that is you know, made possible through the underlying blockchain technologies we use. I can go a little bit further into that, but I'll tell you one quick story that's interesting about the evolution of digital content. There was a company a while back called Redigi, which allowed people to resell digital content. Primarily, it was music back then, so MP3s. And they actually got shut down because they got sued by Capitol Records for copyright law. Fast forward now, the power of blockchain, which gives you the ability to prove that you actually purchased that song or that MP3 or that digital content, and you can legally resell it. Whereas before, you couldn't prove it, so you couldn't legally resell it, and that's why they got shut down. So that's jumping ahead a little bit into like why we started the business and how we benefit our creators and buyers.
I love it. Maybe let's kind of pull the thread of, you know, understanding the importance behind it. I know personally, I'm hearing more and more about the likely eventual need in just the digital market space for leveraging, you know, blockchain technology, especially when it comes to creative content and things on, you know, who actually created these types of things. Maybe, you know, go a little bit deeper for those that are, you know, interested and want to know a little bit more. Kind of give us the kind of maybe your view or your philosophy on why this is so critically important for creators as the digital age just continues to accelerate.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you know, with things that are digital, they are intangible in a sense. So how do you prove ownership? If I've got a watch here, it's like, well, this watch is on my wrist. It's mine. I'm holding it. I own it. But if I purchased a JPEG, how do I know that like that's my JPEG versus somebody else's JPEG? Because when you copy and paste a file, they're all exactly the same. And this is where NFTs came into play. You know, and we've heard of NFTs, and a lot of people think of NFTs as, you know, monkey images, Bored Ape Yacht Club, whatever. But the actual underlying technology of NFTs is astounding fundamentally. It's the ability to prove ownership of something intangible, like a JPEG or like a song, or even like the authorship of the song. So some of the things that we talk about are proof of authorship, proof of copyright or intellectual property ownership, and then proof of right to stream the content. All of these things are again, made possible through blockchain technologies, which is why, even though some of the NFT craze, you know, has come and gone, it's still a very exciting technology.
That is really cool. So let's talk a little bit about, your business and kind of getting, I always like to get into it, maybe a little bit of the nitty gritty in terms of like what the actual business looks like, not just the product or service that's provided. One of the best ways I like to get into it is just like, what's your role in the company? You know, how many different hats do you maybe get to wear these days versus have to wear? But kind of what does your day-to-day look like? What parts of the business do you get to be a part of and are you excited about?
Yeah, well, I've had my hands in all of it. You know, I'm one of the few people who has both left brain, right brain, so pretty strong in the creative department as well as the technology department. I wrote a lot of the code initially that our, you know, our platform was built off of when I was bootstrapping the company myself before we hired any developers. I also, you know, designed the logo, for example. That's, you know, something I did. One of the things that I do every day is I try to ask myself the question of what does success today look like? And that might change week to week. It might change day to day. And that's how I determine which hat or hats to wear for the day. You know, sometimes towards the end of the year, we might be looking at accounting and, you know, filings that we have to do. So the hat that I'm going to wear is going to be, you know, the legal hat. Other days we might have, you know, a really exciting product feature that's about to be released and we're having some, you know, final review or some bugs that need to be fixed. So I might put on my product hat and go dive in with the product team and make sure that product's ready to go. You know, another week we might realize like, hey, we're not getting enough creators signing up. What's missing there? And I'll put my marketing hat on and get into the research of the marketing. There's a saying that someone else came up with and I can't remember who, but it's that a CEO has a duty to stay close to the things that matter in a company. Those things, some of those things are static, but some of those things change over time. At Curios, we spent 2023 focused very heavily on product. So I wore a lot of product hat all year, and that was our plan. 2024 for us is going to be growth. So the thing that's going to matter to us in 2024 is growth. And I'm going to change into my growth hat, which is, you know, marketing, go-to-market strategy, partnerships, stuff like that.
I love it. When you look at having the ability to have the, you know, play different roles on different days, depending on kind of what's needed. Do you find yourself enjoying one or two kind of hats or roles more than the other? And I guess the flip side of the question, do you have one or two that you're like, as soon as somebody else is on the team to be able to do this consistently, so I don't have to do it, this is the first one to go?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I really do like most, if not all, aspects of business. I definitely feel myself always being gravitated towards product and technology. That's my, you know, ethos. That's who I am. I am a digital product guy. And I always approach that from the user's perspective. So it's like, how can I build something that's going to make the user's life easier or better? And so it's hard for me to a lot of times pull away from the product team, get out of the code, away from the technology and focus on other aspects of the business that matter. You know, things that I dislike the most would probably be accounting. Even legal, I find pretty fascinating, you know, in terms of structuring agreements, legal strategy and, you know, stock options and how we structure all that. But the accounting is just a grind that I would love to stay out of.
You know, you and several other business owners that I've talked to recently is that tends to be a fairly common hat that's like, we can give that one away when it's time to do so.
Yeah. And another one for me would actually be marketing, interestingly enough. But the marketing management, I like coming up with top level concepts of how are we going to communicate to people what our product does and, it, you know, its value to them. But then I'm like, okay, somebody else go run with that. You know, I don't want to be reviewing tweets and approving them and stuff like that. It's really not something that I'm passionate about.
Fair enough. So maybe talk to us a little bit about kind of where you're at in the, I guess, the business life cycle. So you mentioned this year being, you know, heavy on, you know, product development, that sort of thing. Next year being focused on growth, go to market, you know, growing the marketing side of things. Have you guys officially launched at this point? Do you have, you know, clients or customers at this point? Kind of what does that life cycle look like for y'all today?
Yep. So we're a fully operating company with products in the marketplace. We are generating revenue, not profitable, pretty standard for a startup at our stage. You know, the startup life cycle goes something like you bootstrap a proof of concept enough to prove that there's a market for what you're doing. You raise funds, which we did in 2022. Then you hunker down on your product and really deliver to the world what you think it needs. Once you've got that product in place, then you try and grow the usage and traction of it. not even worrying about revenue, you know, in 2024. 2025 would be the year when we worry about revenue. Now we've got our product, we've got our traction and our users. Let's figure out how to monetize them. I think there was another question in there that I maybe forgot.
I think you hit the main points. If there was another question, I may have also forgotten it. So that is fantastic. When we look at, you know, moving into the next year, next 2 years, and you start going into kind of this growth phase, I always like to ask, and you've kind of answered this a little bit already, but the general question, like, who does your business serve? And the way I like to frame is, if I'm watching this later on and I'm in the audience, how do I know that I might be a good fit for the services y'all provide, or I might know somebody that I need to recommend, hey, go check this out?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's changed a little bit over time, which is, again, very normal for a startup. We originally devised what I would call B2B product, which was Web3 business technologies for businesses who are looking to get into NFTs, you know, build Web3 engagement for their brand. We've got a business dashboard that they can log into and use all these tools, but businesses have pulled back a lot on that. Hmm. So we instead decided to go straight to what we call the creators, which in a sense, it's still B2B because creators are entrepreneurs themselves. They're, you know, writing music and for the purposes of monetizing it. So it's still B2B, but it's a fundamentally different product. And so some of the value propositions that we deliver to our creators are that they keep 100% of the revenue. Versus selling through, you know, an ebook through audible.com, you're going to lose 40% of that sale to Audible. The other benefit that we add to our creators is that if they're building a community of fans, they get to engage with those fans directly. They actually receive their contact information the way someone would when they subscribe to your email list. And so we're trying to teach creators, hey, get off of Twitter, use Twitter for, you know, discovery, that's fine, but get your fans over to Curios, because on Twitter, first of all, you could get canceled and all of your millions of followers are just gone. Thanks, Twitter or Instagram. But even if you have millions of followers and you post an update, not many of them are going to see it. The way the algorithms work, only maybe 10% are going to see your update in their feed. So, you know, again, the value propositions that we present to our creators are keep more of your revenue and keep your fans and directly engage with them. They're not going to be taken from you. So if you're an athlete, an influencer, you know, an author, a writer, an artist, a digital artist, or a traditional artist or a musician, there's a lot of value for you to using Curios tools to engage your fans and monetize your content.
Dang. So I don't know if this is just like, it's finally connecting in my brain. As someone that loves marketing and kind of understanding those types of things personally, you know, the value of owning your audience versus, you know, renting space on somebody else's network, so to say,
right.
You know, this blockchain technology moving into Web3 seems to really give a completely new context to what owning your audience and fans really can look like.
And you hit the nail on the head, by the way, with your, you know, your use of the word ownership. So if you go deeper into our company and our philosophies and our overarching long-term strategy, it's entirely about ownership. We are an ownership technology company. We don't present ourselves that way because that's too abstract for people to understand. We present ourselves as a creator marketplace, but we are really about the ownership.
Mm. Man, I love that. That is... I'm like super fascinated now. I'm going to have to continue to go on and do way more research. But let's pivot and talk a little bit about marketing. So especially as you now shift into more growth mode, you're going to kind of take into, you know, the marketing side of things. I always like to just ask some general questions around marketing. You know, it's an area that for most or many business owners out there, maybe isn't the simplest concept to really understand and get good at, unless they're, you know, they've got a big background in marketing. So as you kind of look forward and start to continue to grow the company, what's your philosophy to marketing? How do you anticipate to get the word out there about the amazing services that you provide to this target audience of creators?
Yeah, man, it's a real challenge. And there's so many different ways in which you can approach marketing. You know, there's pay to play, which is what a lot of marketing is these days. You know, I remember when social media was new, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. And if you just had a Facebook profile, you could suddenly amass hundreds of thousands of followers and customers because there wasn't a lot of people doing it. And there were these network effects. It was amazing. But then the social media companies, once they got everybody hooked, got wise, and they said, okay, well, you know, we'll let you get your followers, but then if you post an update or try to sell a product to them, we're going to limit, you know, that funnel so that you're only going to get a percentage of them unless you pay. If you pay, then you can, you know, get your product in front of all of your followers. So now you got to do the work to get the followers, and then you got to pay to market to them. So, you know, the world of marketing is very much pay to play, but I always still think of, you know, what are the grassroots organic opportunities, word of mouth opportunities, and, you know, what I would call growth hacking, which a lot of people consider a bad word these days. You know, for those of you who don't know, growth hacking was this idea of like, think outside the box, do anything to increase the number of users. It got really black hat. A lot of people started like signing people up without their permission, stealing email lists. So that's why growth hacking became a, you know, a bad word. But, you know, just like you might do life hacking to try to improve your life, you can do market hacking or marketing hacking, growth hacking, whatever you want to call it, you know, pick a positive term. And really think outside the box to find ways to get people in the door. So I'll give a, you know, a couple nuggets away here. There are some of our secret sauce in marketing. We don't target the fans because trying to get a million fans to sign up is really hard. We target the creator who has a million fans. We get one creator, he's going to bring his million followers with us. So even if it costs us, you know, $10,000 in marketing to get that one creator, well, we're going to get a million fans with it. So it's marketing at scale.
I love that. And for those that are watching this or maybe a little bit, we'll call it old school marketing, did a lot of things offline. Like that's it, kind of bring that. It's the same as doing a kind of a strategic partner or host beneficiary is kind of another mm-hmm. example there. It's like, who do you know that has the audience? Like who has the email list or the, you know, the mailing list that you can send a letter to on, you know, on your behalf. It's that same type of concept where there's tons of leverage. And it's just really cool to kind of, when you start connecting those, here's what worked a long time ago with things that people got, you know, physically, and, you know, there's a way to do it digitally as well.
Yeah. And partnerships are still really valuable. So, you know, we'll look to partner with music guilds, right, who have a, you know, a group, a congregation of musicians. So partnerships are still a very valuable strategy.
I love it. So, you know, let's take a quick step back. We went really deep into, well, really deep meaning, you know, a little bit with regards to kind of business, where y'all are at, that sort of thing. But I'd love to take a step back and just kind of talk about this journey of you starting or getting into creating the company, choosing to found it and move forward. What was the catalyst for that, for creating Curios specifically? What was the catalyst for you that said, this is a thing that we're gonna, you know, start with and move forward?
So it might be surprising because it's pretty far off from where we are now. So just a couple background, you know, things for me. I'm a former musician myself. I was a founding member of Lifehouse and Dawes way back in the day. I gave up music because I didn't think I'd ever be able to make any money in it. So I pursued technology instead. And so now here at Curios, you know, come full circle, we're really trying to help musicians make money. We're trying to give them tools. They get to own their work, their fans, and monetize it. You know, that's what we're doing. The reason why I started Curios was actually because I was pitching technology for collectibles, physical collectibles. I'm a rare coin collector and like a pretty avid one. And I was like, man, you know, this space is just ripe for technology disruption because there's a bunch of old people collecting stuff that don't know what they're doing with technology. So as I was pitching investors, trying to get them to invest in this collectible startup, they're like, well, we're not really interested in physical collectibles. Like we don't really understand the space or, you know, the market size, but if you're into collectibles, why aren't you doing digital collectibles, which are NFTs? And I was like, oh, sure. Like I collect anything. Let me take a look. And I hadn't really been, even though I was familiar with blockchain technology, hadn't specifically, you know, honed in on NFTs. So when I did take a look, I realized that the entire thing was just totally defunct. I mean, it was impossible. I spent 3 days trying to buy an NFT through OpenSea and couldn't do it. And I said, that's it. I'm building an easier way to buy and sell NFTs. That's how we started Curios. You know, it's evolved a lot since then.
I love that. And I love the fact that, you know, it has a starting point, but then continues to evolve and change into what it is today, which, it, you know, leads to a natural next question of like, when you look out for the next 3 to 5 years and you kind of set your vision for the, where you think the future of the company is based on data from today, where do you see the business going? Where do you see your role within the company? Does change at all over the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, so this is going to get pretty abstract, but I'll share with you kind of our vision. That's very purposeful. Again, we believe in ownership, and you know, we are trying to own the concept of democratizing ownership, which means, you know, giving ownership tools back into the power of the many instead of the few. And I think of everything from, you know, owning a rare piece of art, which is too expensive, to like owning a piece of real estate, which is too complicated and too expensive. And how are the younger generations gonna take on those things? People that are Gen Z or younger, they literally don't own anything. They rent the music from Spotify, they rent their apartment, they rent their cars through lease agreements. They literally don't own anything. The wisest investors in the world have been quoted to say the only way to build wealth is through ownership of assets. And so although we don't consider ourselves a financial or investment firm, we're really passionate about this content of giving ownership back into the hands of the people. How does that play out long-term? I believe that we can build infrastructure and technologies that can power things like real estate marketplaces, creator marketplaces, collectibles investing. There's no limit to the verticals it can serve, and that's the future.
That is exciting. I absolutely love it. Like I said earlier in this conversation, you're like sparking so many additional things in my brain that now I'm excited to like maybe spend some additional time this weekend and continue some research and connecting further dots that I hadn't connected before. So that's a really cool kind of vision and process there. Well, Grant, I know we've covered quite a bit of ground so far today, and I want to, you know, be respectful of the time that we have on the calendar for the conversation today. I've got a few rapid fire questions. So I like to kind of start to wrap up with a little bit of, I don't know, wisdom nuggets for the audience out there. But as you look at kind of your journey through the company to everything that you came before, what would you say for you has been kind of your key to success?
I think the key to success for me is being honest with myself. There's something that you might call like founder bias, which is where as a founder, you convince yourself that something is a real opportunity or something is a real problem. But you can't do that. You have to really be honest and unbiased and do the research to prove that there's a real problem and that you've got a real solution to it. So honesty with yourself is so critical.
I love that. How about advice? If you could give it, you know, just one piece of advice for other entrepreneurs out there, what piece of advice would you want to leave them with today?
I always like to tell people to focus on that first dollar, which is a bit of a conundrum, because if you're going the high growth startup route with venture capital investing, they don't care about money. They care about traction, proof of concept, growth. You'll figure out how to make money later. But there's this fundamental hump between having a concept, something that you think people will pay for, and actually getting someone to pay for it. And it's getting over that hump that proves to you that you have a viable business opportunity. Now, I'm not saying that you should pursue revenue first, because I believe that the venture capitalists are right. If you want to go for high growth, you got to pursue that traction, that market penetration. Who cares about revenue? But you still need to make that first dollar to prove the concept.
I love that. Book recommendations. And this can be book, it can be audiobook, it can be a podcast that you love if you're not a big, you know, book reader. But I always like to frame it up with, you know, is there a book that comes to mind that you'd recommend to the audience? Or, you know, what's one book that either you're currently reading or have read most recently? And no, it doesn't have to be business related if you don't want it to be.
Sure. Yeah. The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Bleep, you know, you can fill in the blank there. Fundamentally, the book is teaching you about like stop caring about the things that you think matter, like, you know, what people think about your clothes, right? And, you know, start thinking about the things that do matter, like about your health, which is, by the way, a major contributor to your success. If you're healthy, you'll be, you know, more successful. And then it covers business topics as well about, you know, stop worrying about whether or not you have followers on social media. If that doesn't lead to revenue, worry about the things that do lead to revenue. So The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Bleep, it's one of the, I laughed out loud so many times when I read it. It's a phenomenally insightful book.
Oh, fantastic. That one's been on my list for a while, but I don't think it's actually come up in any of these conversations yet. So I'm excited to add it to the list for the Spotlight series. Final rapid fire question, then we'll kind of move into where folks can find out more information, et cetera. And this one's just kind of fun. When you look at your business today, if you could, wake up tomorrow, be able to sprinkle a little bit of magic dust on just one spot, one area in the business, and you only get to choose one. And it will magically make it, 10 times, 100 times better than it is, today. Where would you choose to put that magic dust?
I would choose to put it on the user experience. I actually think that the user experience is more important than the underlying tech. We've spent a lot of time building amazing underlying tech, not enough time on building beautiful, elegant user experience. It's pretty good, don't get me wrong, but I would love to see it improve.
I love that. I appreciate you saying it too. And I think there's definitely a lot of power in the I don't know, ease of use and what the experience is for the end user. So, for those that want to connect with you, that want to learn a little bit more, about Curios, about the work that y'all are working through and continue to create and build, where can we advise them to go for a little bit more information?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about the company, curios.com, pretty easy, Curios. If you want to follow me personally and some of my business philosophies, you can find me on LinkedIn or grantpowell.com. And I'm always happy to engage in conversation.
Excellent. I love it. I will put both of those in the video description below. So I'm going to highly recommend for everyone that's watching this later on, at bare minimum, take a moment, go connect on LinkedIn, send a quick message, say, "Hey, Grant, saw you on the Business Spotlight. Amazing conversation." And just make some connections here, especially for those of you that are in Texas. It's fun to, make some real life connections through these series. So please take a moment to go do that. But Grant, as we finish up, I always like to end on one very specific question, which is simply, what's most inspiring to you today?
So indirectly related to my business, but financial literacy. And this goes into, some of the concepts of ownership. But I think the more people can educate themselves on how to manage and grow finances, the better, happier, healthier we all will be.
I love that. That hits home for me, so I definitely appreciate that one. But Grant, I want to say thank you again for taking the time. I'm sure I could sit here and ask you a whole bunch of questions about deeper within the technology, et cetera, and really have some fun. But I just want to say thank you for taking the time and being here to share a bit of the journey with us today.
Thanks to you. Great questions. Really appreciate it.